Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
What does it mean to survive gun violence in the United States?
It was the first time since graduating Columbine that I'd had to experience a fire drill. I had this full-blown PTSD episode, tears streaming down my face, frozen, shaking, you know, the whole bit. And my teacher came and she was like, "What is going on?" And I was like, "I have PTSD. I can't do this today. I gotta go."
I could not finish high school because I would get so anxious in school, being in a classroom with all those people. I had to drop out and get my GED because I just had so much anxiety.
I seen regular guns outside in the communities in like a sewer. I looked downward and all I see is a handgun. I forgot. I think it was a 45. And I also seen a knife with it and I was like, wow. And that's when I was 8.
You were 8 and you were seeing guns in the street.
8, 9, and it kept getting older.
My 8th grade year, I was 13. My dad got shot multiple times. Just sitting outside.
People want you to get over it. You know, I wasn't shot. I'm not in a wheelchair or anything like that. And so, so it's, you know, people say just, you know, move along.
We have people dying every day in our face, our own classmates. We can't go outside past a certain time. You can't do this, you can't do that because you're scared of dying from a gun or something like that.
Those are survivors of mass shootings and people who experience gun violence in their communities every day, talking to The Takeaway about their trauma. Since last week, 2 Parkland students who survived the mass shooting just over a year ago died of apparent suicide. And this week, the father of one of the young victims of the Sandy Hook attack also killed himself. Many factors are at play in any suicide, and it can be hard to draw direct lines between something like the Parkland attacks and the suicides of survivors. But one thing is certain, witnessing gun violence, either once on a mass scale or through continued exposure, has an impact on a person's mental health. And the risks of this kind of trauma feel especially acute when we're talking about children and teens. Maurice Richards is a psychology professor at Loyola University Chicago who studies the effects of community violence on adolescents. And Sandro Galea is the dean of the Boston University School of Public Health. And he starts by describing the impact a mass shooting can have on people's mental health.
To my mind, the way to think about these events is, in some respects, in concentric circles. So first of all, when we have these terrible tragedies, you have the people who are directly, who are killed, or then people who are injured. So you have that group of people who are really at the highest risk of having mental health problems after these events. Then you have their family and loved ones. And then you have the community at large, which is the people around them. And we know that from a point of view of mental health problems after trauma, and we know this from trauma in general, but it's reasonable to assume that it applies to guns and gun violence, that the people who are injured are the ones who are most likely to have mental health consequences. Then you have their family and loved ones, and again, you have the general community.
And Sandra, just want to follow up on that. Is it possible to draw any connections between, for example, the Parkland attack and the 2 suicides we've seen by survivors recently?
Yeah, I think we have to be careful about drawing too much from individual events. 2 suicides are obviously deeply sad, but we have to be careful statistically. But having said that, the observation that after gun violence, you have a high prevalence of mental illness among those who are affected is fairly straightforward. The observation that mental illness is one of the biggest risk factors for subsequent suicide is fairly straightforward. So the fact that we are seeing suicides in people who are affected by these events really, I think, appropriately draws our attention to these events and should serve as a wake-up call to all of us to recognize that mental health is a problem that we seldom discuss about mass shootings and shootings in general. It's something that should rise to our consciousness. So thank you for bringing this conversation up.
You're welcome. We think it's a very important one to begin and to continue. Maurice, I want to bring you in here because over the summer, our team went down to Miami and talked to young Black children in a community that had been deeply affected by gun violence. And This is a community that is different from what we think about when we think about surviving mass shootings. Can you tell us, Maurice, what the experience is of teenagers that you work with who have repeated exposure to gun violence in their communities?
Yes, it is similar and in some ways different. So one of the important differences is that kids living in very low income, very high crime communities experience repeated exposure to violence. And so it has somewhat different effects because of that. And also they live in the context of this high poverty and high crime, sometimes deep poverty, which creates a whole other set of difficulties for the kids and their families. You know, they experience stresses to do with, you know, fear of evictions, possible homelessness. Definitely most of the kids I work with experience some form of hunger and poor quality schools. Just some examples of the context within which they live.
And Maurice, I'm wondering if you could even expand on that a little bit. I mean, I grew up in public housing. I'm a woman of color. I understand some of these issues. But for the broader audience here, let's talk a little bit about those stresses. You're describing things that are chronic stressors, lack of food, lack of stability, you know, on top of witnessing gun violence, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. And it creates larger challenges for kids to be effective in school, to be effective as kids. They often don't have places to play that are safe. And when you're hungry and you're living in some form of fear, it's hard to pay attention and to do well in school. So there's a constant kind of level of interference with their functioning and their sense of, you know, just being able to relax and enjoy life. The other thing is that kids growing up in this kind of dense poverty often, most times, do not have access to mental health services. So they don't have access to treatment or therapy to help them manage and deal with the mental health problems that they're experiencing. And then the other piece is that they have ready access to guns. So not only do they lack access to the services, but they also have access to firearms, which creates more difficulties for them.
We have Maurice Richards with us. She's a psychology professor at Loyola University Chicago who studies the effects of community violence on adolescents. And Sandro Galea is the dean of the Boston University School of Public Health. Maurice, let's talk about solutions. Are there best practices to help children who are exposed to gun violence in their communities, particularly talking about Black and brown low-income children who are facing a variety of stressors, not just gun violence?
Yeah, so we know that families are very important to kids, obviously. So when the work I've done and many others have done is we find that when families are supportive of kids, that they demonstrate warmth, that parents are able to listen and show concern and care about the feelings of kids, that kids do better. When kids feel connected with their parents, when they spend more time with their families and they feel close to their mothers and fathers, the outcomes are better. The mental health is better, even when they're exposed to high levels of community violence. So families are really important, obviously. But the other thing is that we find that neighborhoods, when neighborhoods are more cohesive, in other words, neighbors look out for each other, they look out for the kids in the neighborhood, they're safe places for kids to play, that helps kids to do better in life. And then there's schools where teachers understand trauma. When teachers and administrators are trauma-informed, kids are more supported within those contexts. And, you know, obviously kids spend lots of time in school. So those are important elements. And we just need more services and programs for these kids. Many of these schools have limited social workers and counselors available, and kids need access, especially kids who've been experienced trauma. They need access to those kind of services. And the services really need to be in the schools. Kids are not able to cross gang lines. Thus, they cannot go to other places, even within their neighborhoods, if it's across a gang line. And parents can't attend services if they're not immediately accessible. And again, schools are really best places for those kinds of programs.
Sandro, why don't we see this as a public health crisis. If this is having, if mass shootings and community violence, both of these types of violence are having such an impact on particularly young people's mental health, why have we stopped short of calling this a public health crisis?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think the answer to that is that some of us have not stopped short of calling it a public health crisis. It is a public health crisis. We can start with firearms themselves, to paraphrase the former Surgeon General Satcher, who said, well, if it's not a health issue, why are so many people dying from it? That by definition makes it a health issue. That's on the guns themselves. Mental health, we have historically not treated mental health as equal to physical health, which of course is baffling because mental illness is as disabling and in many cases more and more disabling for a longer period of time than is physical health. So we should think of mental health as a public health crisis, particularly after traumatic events. And if I may underscore that something that Marie said, hopefully this is applicable to all listeners because we are talking about disadvantaged children. But the core of the message that Maurice was giving about the importance of social isolation is true, whether it is underprivileged kids or any kid or any adult who experiences traumatic events. If I were to say, what is the one thing, what is the one risk factor that we should avoid? It's social isolation. We know that social supports in the immediate surroundings of the person who has experienced a traumatic event or social cohesion, again, as Maurice said, in the community, are immensely protective for the mental health consequences of these events. So that, I think, puts a premium on us to make sure that we create environments where we have those supports for people who experience these events. And to create those environments, we need to have the conversation, which is why I'm very grateful to you for having the conversation, and be clear that this is a health concern and we should create the supports to listen to it and to deal with it.
And this is probably going to sound a little bit pie in the sky, Sandra, so forgive me for this, but we are here, and Maurice, we are here talking about issues like social isolation and really dealing with the response to mass shootings and gun violence. What about the prevention here? I mean, what about going as far back as that? Is there the potential for mental health services starting from the beginning so we can avoid these types of issues? Or is that just not even feasible at this point?
I don't think it's pie in the sky at all. I think it's aspirational. It's exactly the kind of aspiration we should have. And the question becomes, how do we create that? And I think we create it in two ways relevant to this conversation. Number one is we need to understand that mental health, more than other forms of health, are deeply responsive to social and economic conditions. If we want to improve population mental health, what we need to do is create a society that generates health. That means stable social supports, that means cohesive neighborhoods, that means healthy places where people eat, live, work, and play. That ultimately is deeply protective against mental illness and protects people when unexpected stressors like traumatic events happens. That's number one. And the second thing is we need to shift the national conversation to recognize that traumatic events are public health issues, that mental health is an important public health concern. Because when we do that, when the conversation shifts, it creates the space for creative solutions. And I worry that the fact that we have not had this conversation as much as we should be having has hampered our collective capacity to come up with creative solutions.
Maurice, what would it change for victims and survivors if we treated gun violence like a public health issue in this country, particularly for the communities that you work with?
Well, I think that one of the things that is desperately needed is improved communities for kids to live in. So I think that when investments are made in communities, long-term investments, schools are really improved. Financing of schools is muchly improved. And families are fully supported in their efforts to raise kids in a healthy way, that you see changes. You see real improvements for the kids. So I think investments in the community is extremely important. I've worked in the South Side and West Side of Chicago for many years, and poverty is a huge public health concern.
Maurice Richards is a psychology professor at Loyola University Chicago. Maurice, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you.
And Sandro Galea is the dean of the BU School of Public Health. His forthcoming book is called Well, What We Need to Talk About When We Talk About Health. Sandra, thanks to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And if you or someone around you needs help, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255.